ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Nightlife. News Breakdown.
Well, welcome to Nightlife News Breakdown. The Labor government's broken a long-standing parliamentary deadlock by striking a deal with the Greens to overhaul the Environment Protection and Biodiversity Conservation Act. It's a very important piece of legislation. This is the Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, speaking this morning.
For the first time, Australia will have a National Environment Protection Agency, a strong independent regulator with a clear focus on ensuring better compliance with and stronger enforcement of Australia's new environmental laws. In another first, Australia will have national environmental standards to ensure clear, strong guidelines to protect the environment. There will be higher penalties for the most significant breaches of environmental law, as well as environment protection orders for use in urgent circumstances to prevent and respond to major contraventions of the law.
Yes, it's as I said, it's an important day. This piece of legislation, 1,500 pages long, and has been argued about and developed for years. As expected, the Greens took the opportunity to voice their thoughts on the announcement. This is the leader of the Greens, Larissa Waters, at a press conference this morning.
Well, the Greens are determined to get shit done. It takes us forward with protection from land clearing. And importantly, it stops coal and gas from being approved within 30 days, which is what the government's original bill proposed. But the government refused to include climate considerations in the Act.
Nevertheless, here we are. We've got one. Krishani Danji is the political reporter for Guardian Australia and joins us tonight for a look at the day's proceedings. Krishani, welcome back to Nightlife.
Thank you, Philip.
The PM's described this as a win-win. It's definitely a win for Labor and a win for the Greens. What about the Coalition? Would the government have preferred to make a deal with the Coalition, I wonder?
I think, from what I understand, it seemed genuinely 50-50. Mm. Throughout the negotiations, they were pretty seriously talking to both the Coalition and the Greens the entire time. And I think one of the really interesting slash strange things is just how different the concessions were for either side, because obviously the Coalition and the Greens are coming from two very different points of view. And so they had two, like, quite separate amendments on either side, and it was basically, here's what we're offering the Coalition, here's what we're offering the Greens, we need someone to come to the table. And I think, if I can reflect for a moment, Philip, the dynamic was so interesting because for Labor, they said they have been promising an environmental protection agency for two terms now, for two elections. It's a key promise of theirs. They're finally going to deliver it. And so it's been a big priority for them from day one. And they said it needs to get done this year. It has to be done. We'll take whoever does it with us. And so in a way, you know, they're sort of wearing their hearts out on their sleeve and saying, please come to us. But on the other hand, I think this is why it's a win for the Greens and a loss, a real blow for the Coalition, is that it is one of the first really big, really significant pieces of legislation that is up for debate and negotiation. And really, whoever does come to the fight and wins that negotiation is also a big moment for that party as well. And I think for someone like Larissa Waters, the new Greens leader, to come out, she's not someone who has the same recognition as, say, Adam Bandt did, who obviously lost his seat of Melbourne in the 2025 election, which was a real shock for people. The Greens are ultimately the Green Party. Environment is their bread and butter. And so, you know, their mandate is really to say, we have done something better for the environment. So it's important for them as well to be able to do this. For the Coalition, I think it's a blow. Business were really keen and industry were really keen for the Coalition to get the deal done with them, because essentially a lot of what they were pushing for was stuff that the industry wanted. But there were kind of a few things that they were really hung up on that weren't necessarily things that industry were pushing for, that the government said, well, we're not going to go there. And I think the Prime Minister reflected this morning that, you know, he's made it clear that they wanted this to get done this year. Today was the last sitting day of the year, except for a very small sort of one-hour sitting tomorrow to get it through the House. But the Coalition was still, he said, saying that they wanted more amendments and those amendments would be made clear soon last night. And for them, that was absolutely, like, they're not doing that because...
What did the Greens... Labor had to make concessions to the Greens. The Greens, one of their big things was... Well, two big things were coal and gas approvals and also protection of native forests from logging. So what's going to happen now with native forest logging?
It's a really interesting one. So at the moment, native forest logging is not included within the EPBC Act. So what's happening is a removal of that, but a sunsetting of that. So in 18 months from now, native forest logging will be included under the EPBC Act, which means that they will be subject to all of the rules and the regulations around nature protection and conservation, that other projects are as well. And that was something that was a real kind of red line for the Greens. I think that's really the biggest thing that the Greens were able to get a concession for. And then the government set up this $300 million fund as well around protecting native forests. The details around that are still a little bit hazy. I should say, Philip, there are quite a lot of things within this legislation, despite it being 1,500 pages, which are kind of unclear. Like, the government has put forward proposed environmental standards. All of that kind of stuff, those standards will be agreed upon in the near future. And it's something that Graham Samuel himself, he's the guy that the former government commissioned to originally look at the EPBC Act 5 years ago. He said that, you know, it will now be up to the government. It'll be up to the department to actually set those standards. The other really big one that the Greens did secure is to stop coal and gas fossil fuel projects from being fast-tracked. So one of the big things in this legislation is creating more certainty for industry to be able to sort of set clearer rules and clearer timelines for projects to be approved. And they've got this sort of streamlined fast track process that they're going to create. One of the big concerns was that fossil fuel projects could be approved within like 30 days. Mm. And so a big concession as well that the Greens have secured on that is that they will not be included in that fast-tracking process.
Mm. Yes, it's interesting. I'd say a very significant piece of legislation too. Reactions from industry and other conservation groups. I heard Bob Brown today from the Greens saying, giving it a tick.
Yeah, I mean, environment groups are pretty happy with it. There are still general concerns around the fact, and this is something that the Greens had been pushing for but wasn't ultimately agreed upon, was a climate trigger, which would really force projects to disclose exactly how much, will allow the government to, or the Environment Protection Agency to block a proposal if the emissions were going to be too high. So environment groups are still a little bit concerned that this law doesn't actually stop new coal and gas from being approved. Projects can still be expanded.
Yeah.
Industry, it was a mixed reaction. I mean, they've been pushing from the start for these laws to be reformed. Like, everyone on the planet in Australia has agreed that the legislation in its current form does not work. Industry was the same. I think they're happy about the fact that there is more certainty. And the Prime Minister did say today that there was a little bit sort of, he seemed to kind of suggest that there might be some concessions around the clearer definition of unacceptable impacts. So that's where there are just unacceptable impacts of a project that it would have on the environment, and it would get an absolute no. Even like scientists and legal experts had said that those original definitions were pretty vague. So the government is still kind of clearly working with industry. They were very emphatic today that it's good for business.
Yeah.
The business groups seem to have responded pretty well to that, but they're also like, we wish that the deal had been done with the coalition, that a bunch of other stuff that we'd asked for had been accepted.
Sure. Okay. Anyway, it's done. Murray Watt said it was going to be done before Christmas. I expressed some scepticism, but
he was confident the whole time.
He's a can-do guy, isn't he? He is, yeah. All right, now to Barnaby Joyce. Here we go. Chapter 56 of the saga. he spoke about 5 weeks ago and said he might do it. Today he did.
So after 30 years with the National Party, I am resigning from the party. And that really leaves me with a heavy heart. And I apologise for all the hurt that that will cause other people. I really do.
That he didn't take the next leg and say whether he was going to join the One Nation party. He had this to say outside Parliament after he made his announcement.
It's certainly not a decision I took lightly. It's not as if I fell over at the first hurdle. I've been trying to work my way through this for a long period of time, I'd say a couple of years. And there seemed no real resolution to the breakdown in the relationship, and therefore the smartest thing to do is move on.
Although with perhaps less than candour, because he's got an eye to the main chance here, hasn't he, Barnaby Joyce? He's a one-brand politician, and the brand is Barnaby Joyce, Krishani. I'm with Krishani Danji, political reporter for Guardian Australia. He's a one-brand politician, the brand is Barnaby Joyce, so he's looking to see what he might do here. He's going to sit on the crossbench, but what does he do at the next election? Now, there's been a lot of speculation he'll join One Nation and try for a New South Wales Senate seat. One Nation's already got a New South Wales Senator, don't they?
That is right, they do already, although I would note that So Sean Bell, who is the current senator, he replaced another senator who was elected in the 2025 election. Mm. So Barnaby Joyce, if he decided to join One Nation, he would still be sitting number one on the Senate ticket, which means that as soon as you vote One Nation, he's the first person
at the next half to get that vote. The next half Senate election. Yeah,
that's right, because Senate elections are every 6 years, but every election is every 3 years. So you have these alternating. Yeah. Elections for senators.
So it would work
in that way.
Would he? I mean, yeah, it's a half Senate election, so the quota's high. I mean, would he get a quota? It's hard to know, isn't it?
It is hard to know. I mean, Barnaby Joyce, as you say, his brand is Barnaby Joyce. Mm. And he certainly does bring a lot of familiarity and recognition. The issue I think that he would have is that, well, I mean, even then, you look at the polling that One Nation has at the moment, and it is quite high. I think that's genuinely why he is considering One Nation, and, you know, they're very opposed to any kind of climate action, which is the same as he feels. The reason in a way why he's left the Nationals is because he's always considered himself a leader. And when he was booted as leader and replaced by David Littleproud, they've just continued to have issues in recent times, and they've just not really gotten along. Barnaby Joyce has said even today that, you know, he kind of wants to do the best thing, or what is the best thing for him. So if, for example, and, you know, subtle hints here and there, you can read as much into it as you like, Pauline Hanson recently changed the name of her party from Pauline Hanson's One Nation to just One Nation. Mm. So in some sort of scenario that some people have been talking about, Barnaby Joyce would win the New South Wales Senate seat. And it's interesting because it was a surprise, I think, to a lot of people when One Nation won a Senate seat in New South Wales in the last election. And so they would have to do that again. But if he did that, and then Pauline Hanson decided, well, now's the time for retirement, then Barnaby Joyce would be the next obvious pick to be leader, which would make him happy, and then kind of allow the party to continue to have this kind of slightly infamous, famous person at the top.
Mm. It's interesting, isn't it? It's interesting. Barnaby is obviously looking to see what might supplement the farm income for him. And he's a canny politician. We'll see. All right, look, the final question time of the year, Krishani. It was the end of school vibes in the House this afternoon. Speaker of the House, Milton Dick, was in a festive mood.
You're not to abuse standing orders like that. I'm feeling generous because it's Christmas time.
Yes, Leader of the Opposition, Susan Lee, started the session for the Liberal Party with a stunt of their own. Krishani, what did they do?
Yeah, it was kind of funny. The Liberal Party has for quite a while been really trying to push the government, push Labor on this promise that they made at the 2022 election that by 2025 household bills would be down by $275. And you've probably heard that to death at this point. I know I have. But the government had kind of conceded a while ago that that simply wasn't going to happen. One of the big reasons for that was the war in Ukraine. that saw oil and energy prices just soar through the roof, and gas prices soar through the roof. And since then, we've obviously had inflation and a whole sort of raft of issues that have made energy really, really expensive. And there is a genuine question there for the government around energy prices. I digress. Coming back to the point, what happened is Susan Lee asked this question about the $275 promise, and then all of the coalition members lifted up these pieces of paper with a couple of different posters. So there was one which had $275 with a big red cross through it, and then there was a picture of Anthony Albanese with broken promise on it, and there were other photos. It was all quite dramatic, and they're all having a big laugh, and then Milton Dick was not having it.
What did the PM do?
I think someone from the government benches shouted that they're trying to paper over the cracks of the coalition. The PM, you know, it's sort of one of those things. He then, you know, sort of quickly, very promptly returned serve back to the coalition, and there was the rest of question time.
Independent member for Wentworth, Allegra Spender, had this question towards the end of the session.
Many constituents complain to me that question time is question time, it's not answer time, and that is driven by the standing orders that don't actually force real answers from the government.
Well done, Sherlock.
It's a good point.
I know it's a great point, Krishani, but she is not the first person to have realised it. What did the Prime Minister have to say?
It was kind of interesting. So he didn't really... The question that she was asking is whether the government and the Prime Minister would consider tightening some of the rules to make ministers more accountable to actually stick to the answers of the questions. There wasn't any suggestion that they would do that. The PM basically said that when he was manager of business in the House, you know, 10 years ago under a former Labor government, he was the one that kind of tightened the answers down to 3-minute time limits, which would keep people from rambling, and then also ensured that question time, which previously used to be bang on 1 hour, could be extended. So now you'll often find that it goes for 70, 75 minutes in the House, so there are more questions that are asked. He seemed to sort of run through his resume on that, and then also did this comparison to other countries like the UK and Indonesia and India, where they don't have as transparent question times as we do. Basically, it was not answer time again.
No. Anyway, Krishani, lucky for you, or maybe not, I guess, you'll not have any more question times, nor will we, until we regroup in February next year, when it'll be a brand new political year. Krishani, terrific to have had your insights and reportage too. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Phil. Appreciate it.
Krishani Ganji is a political reporter for Guardian Australia.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.